It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
Aloha, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole. And your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best of the best of golf and the golf lifestyle. It is sunny, and birds are singing, and it's great golf weather here in Washington, D.C., where I am. And I hope it is where you are, too. We're going to have a great show for you today. We're going to have two of my very favorite people in the entire business. Number one, we're going to have a guy who is... what hasn't he done in golf? He's designed courses. He speaks before Congress. He writes poetry. He is just a unique individual. He is, of course, my good friend Robert Trent Jones Jr. talking about golf and everything else with us today on the 19th hole. Also, we have the founder of Club Champion, Nick Sherburn. And Nick has just unleashed a torrent of response with Club Champion. It's gone from zero to completely dominating the club fitting world. And that club fitting is becoming the thing to do. It's becoming, it's gone from something that has been something that only professionals do to something that almost everybody does. And we're here to talk to Nick about how that came to be, what's going on now, and of course, what's going to be happening in, with that in the future. It's going to be a great, great show, and it's going to be all the better for the fact that you are listening to it. So get yourself a cold beverage and a crunchy snack, and we'll be right back. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, and again, very excited that the golf season has started. It's even warm here on the East Coast, and we're just seeing so many new and interesting things. We have a new champion at the Masters. We have a great championship season lined up. We have the game being as popular, if not more popular, than it's ever been, and we have National Golf Day, the annual day where the golf industry comes to Washington to lobby for those issues that are important for it. I can think of no better person to talk about this than somebody who actually needs no introduction. He is one of the finest golf course architects, I will venture to say, ever. He's also a very erudite man. He's written books. He has done so many things, but he takes the time to come on this show, inexplicable as it is. He does that. Please welcome my very, very dear friend, Robert Trent Jones Jr. to the 19th hole. Bobby, how are you, sir?
Okay, Michael, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm exhausted from that interview. I was excited by doing that. I hope it got you as excited listening to it.
Yeah, I did.
Well, good. I'm glad that you are still here. after that long interview, I'll just start with a couple of questions. Did you happen to see the Masters this year?
Oh, I was there. Wouldn't miss that. That's basically T.S. Eliot was wrong. April is not the coolest month. If you're in Augusta, it's the most fun month.
It is. It really is.
Yeah. It was wonderful.
What were your thoughts? I mean, on the experience, the Augusta experience is as good as it's ever been, and just your thoughts on this year's champion for the first time, Rory McIlroy, first at Augusta. Is it all that is cracked up to be?
Yeah, it is. They do it once a year, unlike U.S. Open, which goes around to different venues and might be a decade apart from going to Wingfoot twice or Olympic Club or Pebble Beach or somewhere like that. And so they are able to improve their whole operation every year. It's predictable. The first thing you notice is you must give your cell phone away or you can't bring it in or you're forever banned. And that makes you feel like you're back in the 1970s or something or 80s. And it's really wonderful. You actually sit down and talk to people and they listen. They don't look down their laps if you're having a little snack while you're watching and waiting for the play to start near the first tee. And then when the play does start, you're completely focused on the golf and the players, and you're really in the game with them. So that atmosphere is unique in sport, and it's enforced, and it's what I love about being at Augusta National during the Masters Week.
You're right about that. It really is unique. Now that you think about it, it's unique in any sport, almost in any venue. To say that you can't bring your phone is no one would even think to do that. But at Augusta, we accept it, and we revel in it. As a matter of fact, it's a beautiful thing, and it makes for a great experience. And what went on the golf course, I thought was special too. I talked about it before, but I think that Rory is one of the most welcome champions that we have had in a long, long time because of the way he plays and because of the person that he is. What were your thoughts on him as a champion and at the overall play at the Masters this year?
Well, from the beginning, first of all, I have to remember the Masters is an invitational tournament. I sat next to Tommy Aaron, who had won it in 1973. I used to play competitive golf against him in college. And he has this green jacket on. I saw Jack Nicklaus in person. We exchanged with the same age. We first met in the National Juniors in Columbus, Georgia, when we were 15, and we're still friends at 85. So Tom Watson, with whom I worked at Spanish Bay, and remains a good friend. And it was just easy to talk to them. They were there. It's not great. People with a whole bunch of entourage, but just as golfers, and that was for me beautiful. In addition, the play, and you mentioned Rory, the excitement was that he was playing so well that he would be in the hunt, and he clearly was. But the tournament was much more than that. First of all, the crowd, of course, was rooting for him,
yeah.
Partly because of character, partly because it would finish the so-called Grand Slam of his life. And that's a whole nother story. The original Grand Slam was Bobby Jones, and it was the U.S. Amateur and Open and the British Amateur and Open. So this is all professional terms. The Masters as a tournament hadn't even begun when Bobby Jones won the Grand Slam, as Grantland Rice called it. Mm-hmm. So this is the so-called modern life Grand Slam. It's not even 1 year. The person that closest that got it in 1 year was Tiger Woods a few years ago, overlapping 2 years, but four consecutive tournaments. In any event, it's really a misnomer. It's a lovely way of identifying what are the major championships. And of course, Augusta National has artfully drawn itself into that category.
Yes.
Even though an invitational tournament, and Bobby Jones always distinguished the tournament from a championship. A championship had to be a national championship to be called a championship. Anyway, having said all that, Rory is very popular, and rightly so. One wonderful guy from Northern Ireland, and well-liked. Didn't jump the ship with the LIV situation. Was a spokesman for the U.S. Tour, which he participates in, even though he's from Northern Ireland, not the European Tour, for example, because he's a superior player and qualified to do that. And now he's won the four major championships, which makes him a unique and historic figure. The excitement to me was not just about Rory. I was as much rooting for Justin Rose as I was for Rory. It was a kind of the War of the Roses. Mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. Justin. I walked around him at Chambers Bay when he was preparing for the tournament in 2015. And what a lot of people don't know is what a great approach shot maker he is. He can fire the ball where he wants to, and it goes where he wants to once he calculates the distance and strikes the ball. And on Augusta's hilly slopes and three-dimensional architecture, which is quite strong, important. The weather was uniquely good all week. Tiny bit of rain a little bit one morning, but nothing special. And it was lightly breezy, but not strong. And it was overall a good, great week for playing conditions. And Rory and Rose are serious players coming from the British Isles, where weather does have a big component, particularly wind. And they knew how to deal with the three-dimensional nature of the course and the contours within the greens, which are based on St. Andrews, better than the rest of the field, and that came down to the two of them. In addition, Rose is a great putter. And on those greens, which were very fast and with lots of contour, you have to be able to first read them, and then, of course, have the nerves and the beautiful stroke to putt them. And it was just a great, great event. The competition couldn't have been better. Came down to two great people tying for the lead and had to have a playoff. And it could have gone either way. But Rory prevailed.
Do you think that Rory McIlroy, now that he's won this tournament, is, and he has the proverbial monkey off of his back, do you think that he will go on to kind of a Rory 2.0 and go on a run, much like early in his career, where the game seemed so effortless for him? He didn't even really recognize that he was winning these great championships, that the cups were bigger than him, it seemed like, at the time. But now, as he's evolved as a person, as a man, do you think that getting this out of the way will free him to go to even greater heights as a professional?
Well, to answer that question, I'll ask a question. Where would you rather be in July? Somewhere in Northern Ireland or somewhere else in the world to watch what happens there when the champion comes home to his home country for the Open Championship? I mean, that's gonna, those tickets have been sold out for a long time. The game is extraordinarily popular in Northern Ireland and Ireland in general, and at professional level with Rory there, and other great champions who won the British Open from Northern Ireland.
Certainly,
it was going to be an exciting time, and I guess we'll find out on one of the great golf courses, great links and headlands courses, Fort Rush, in the world. The terrain is beautiful. The energy for the crowd is beautiful. Rory will be the person that's being talked about, and we'll find out, I guess, whether he can be in the hunt, and I predict he will be.
And the last question I'll ask about Georgia and that whole thing down there is, do you think Rory, you mentioned Royal Portrush, you have the PGA Championship coming up at Quail Hollow, you have the U.S. Open at Oakmont, some of the hardest, most challenging courses in the world, but it seems that that's where he has excelled in the past. Do you think that there's a chance we might even see a Rory Slam with him winning all four major events in this one year? I mean, obviously the odds are against it, but do you think there's even a chance of it? Is it worth even talking about?
I predict that will not happen. There's just too many other great players and too many vicissitudes in the game. But I think that Rory will be in the hunt in all four of them because his game is as sharp as it ever is. And he's able to overcome adversity when he had those two double bogeys at the end of the first round. He did not speak to the press. I think the press was irritated with that. But Augusta National organizes it so the press has this beautiful press center and feed them well so they don't go out and bother the players on the course. So basically, this is a circus, and even at the highest levels, it's a televised circus, and television kind of rules what happens in the professional tournament, particularly the majors, because there's so much money involved. I think over 20 million people watching the Masters Championships on Sunday, so I'm told. Obviously, Jim Nance, in his 40th tournament Sunday at a Masters, and he's become a great proponent of the course. He's from South Carolina originally, although he went to high school in New Jersey, and one of the great sportscasters of all time. He also played for Houston on the golf team. So this was really a golfer's event, and it will, all of these championships will attract golfers. I think the weakest of the ones will be at Quail Hollow. It's kind of like going to Harbortown next door to Augusta. It's in the same general part of the general south, but it's a month later and it can get hot and sticky, and you can get some weather at that in May that you might not have in April. But the other two courses, as you say, are very difficult. And when a course is difficult, the weather conditions are changeable. I think the best players come up, and Rory, of course, is among them.
He certainly is. And I agree with you. I think that the odds obviously are against him winning all four, but for him to be in the hunt for all four, certainly, it looks like he's in that place, both physically and mentally, where he's freed up to compete and to hit the shots that he has always been capable of hitting. And I think he's going to be more of a joy to watch rather than it's almost a tragicomic figure. I think he'll become that heroic figure that he was early in his career. As you say, we will see. Let's expand our focus, expand our view to the overall game of golf. I will set the stage. The game of golf is in, after the pandemic period, in one of its most healthy states ever. More people are playing the game than ever. They're playing in more places than ever. We're seeing growth of the game, growth of equipment sales. Almost everything is in the black. Almost everything is coming up roses for the game of golf. What are your thoughts on that? And in your own inimitable fashion, look through the. Can you look through what's so good about what's going on with golf and see where the troubles might exist in the near to near, middle, and future?
Well, as you said, golf, the game, is a 500-year-old sport. It's been through wars and religious wars and depressions and empire building through the British Empire and the decolonization in Asia since World War II. Golf moves as a game throughout the entire planet now, including the Soviet Union, Russia. We did a course there, and China, so on and so forth. But it's also subject to the vicissitudes of politics. In China, they erased several courses, including some of mine and Nicholas's.
Yes.
Have built them because the Xi Jinping didn't see golf as a community sport or a sport of the people. But the truth of the matter is that it will survive everywhere it's played because it's a game that you can play from young childhood till you're old and enjoy it. And that's unique. Secondly, every golf course is different from every other one. The field is not prescribed like in football or soccer or other sports. And the land itself gives you a unique opportunity to design a layout which is unique to it. And is taken care of by wonderful people. I call it the gospel of golf. They get up at 4:30 in the morning and go out and cut the grass every day. And if they didn't do that, you wouldn't want to play there after about a month. So it attracts all kinds of people to the game, not just the golfers themselves. It attracts people who love nature and love sport in general and are willing to take care of it. So yeah, I think it's back to where it really should be. Not because of the pandemic per se, that was a unique situation, but also it's been rediscovered by a whole new generation. I'm of the silent generation, which followed the greatest generation, and that was before the baby boomers. But this is a new generation. I don't know, maybe they're the AI generation. I don't even know if they have a name yet. But the point is, they are discovering the game for the first time, and they're enjoying it. And so, yeah, the game is flourishing. Where are some of the trouble spots? Well, clearly, in the labor to take care of a golf course, which is agricultural, people like Troon Golf and I think Kemper and others who are essentially they are personal service businesses have been sold to hedge funds. Now, the difference between a personal service business and a hedge fund is a hedge fund is there to make a profit. It's economics over ecologics. So if the ecologists are going to suffer, there'll be less maintenance people, and you know, they'll try to make the money by paying less for it. You couple that with the EB-5 visas, which have been used by many people to come in and serve the golf clubs, not just the courses, but the wait staff in Florida or other things, now being constrained by our laws, I would say it's going to be a struggle to sort that all out. I know it's very difficult to get competent labor in Hawaii, which is an island nation of itself almost in the middle of the Pacific, even though it's got a great labor force in the Philippines or Indonesia nearby because of the new rules that ICE is enforcing nationwide. And so I think that's a trouble spot that will be addressed by the golf community at the golf summit in early May in Washington, D.C. And by the way, that seems to be the main issue that they bring up every year. There are other issues like water that they bring up and where, you know, the too much water in the south when thunderstorms and worse hurricanes are now more common, and too little water in the west where they fight over between the states from the Colorado River and so on for other uses than golf. But golf is also an open space which provides oxygen and fresh air and is not developed in every little suburb and subdivision throughout the car culture that Detroit came about and as our country now, particularly in the South and the West, is a part of. So looking at the big picture, golf is flourishing. Looking at the details of it, it's going to be a struggle. Now, having said that, the Birdie Act, which was introduced last year by the golf course architects to protect the intellectual property of the designs of those courses and the ownership thereof, is up for discussion as well in the new Congress. And that's important because you're getting other forms of playing golf, like simulators. So we'll see how this all goes, but it's an ever-changing game, staying up with its times.
That was a fascinating run through the entire, the fabric of golf, from the players to the courses to the issues that are surrounding it. I just want to ask you this, because we have this new thing that is Topgolf, we'll just call it, is the most popular version of this thing, is virtual golf, or however you want to phrase that thing. You have, I'll use some numbers, some people say 6 million people or so playing golf, which is around an all-time time, 6 to 9 million people, they say, and somewhere around 36 to 50 million people playing Topgolf. Can the two things coexist, really? I don't even know if you've had a chance to play anything like Topgolf, but when you look at that thing, is it really golf, and is there a way to get those 50 million people out into green grass golf and have them enjoying it in a sustainable fashion?
Well, that's an essay answer to that question, because you've asked three or four questions.
I wouldn't have it any other way with you.
I'll do my best. I'll do my best. So, first of all, have I done it? Well, first of all, the word golf is the Dutch word meaning club. And so in that sense, they use a club in Topgolf. They hit shots out with little golf balls that are especially designed with a chip in them, so that it can show you on a screen where it landed and so on. But it's not golf as we expected, because there's no putting. You don't finish the hole. You just hit. It's basically a driving range and a beautiful opportunity to socialize with your friends and have eat and drink.
Bingo.
While you do that.
Bingo. I always call it a driving range with an Applebee's. Done.
Yeah, there you go. Really, it's more like a bowling alley in the air,
Exactly.
Now, in terms of disc golf, once again, there's no club. So but people go out and play a game with discs. It's really a cross-country marathon discus game where you try to send frisbee-like discs to a certain location. It's not golf at all, because there's no club involved. So the word golf is being misunderstood or misused by these people who are promoting the game, their own games. But whether that encourages people to play the real game, disc golf clearly does not, because they're not even striking a ball, much less putting it. In the case of Topgolf, yeah, that does encourage people to go afterwards and try the green grass game with their friends, their girlfriends, their children included. I mean, I grew up on a driving range and hitting balls just to practice my swing in New Jersey and then play the real game when I got the chance, and then the competitive game, which is the real game, play by the rules and play 18 holes, and the winner buys it, the loser buys the drinks. That's the game I know.
It's a beautiful thing that you have both of those. And I think what I hear you saying is they can coexist, and there will be a certain amount of overlap between the two, people who will go from Topgolf to the green grass game, enjoy it and take it on. And, fingers crossed that is what happens. And that's what we'll see going into the future, because the growth of the game is essential. We've seen these peaks in the game before, like around the when Tiger was first hitting his peak and courses grew crazy. You had courses being built with home communities around them. The golf courses were actually the anchor for these home communities that were being built. And everybody thought this was not coming back, but it did come back. Is there something that we can do to keep golf where it is now at this high? Or is it destined to pull back from this height? And what do you do to prepare for that?
Well, in terms of the numbers identified by the National Golf Foundation, which does a very good job of tracking the data of who's playing and where they're playing and other factors, we live in a data era. Everybody's a data nut, and everybody's calculating these trends. I would say that golf is no different from, say, the dot-com trend. Right now we're in the AI trend. Suddenly it's a new technical thing that happened, the internet, and nobody knew what it's going to be like in 10 or 15 years,
right.
But they made a lot of bets in the 1990s, some of them which failed. And we're in the AI era, and some of those bets that people are investing in will also fail. So I can't predict the future. It's not lineal. It's more exponential. And it's a different era in calculus of data. And I don't think it's a straight line thing that you can project outward as it once was. So I don't really know what's going to happen. I think that many other things can happen, like the interventions of tariffs are going to definitely impact and whether people travel long distances to destination golf courses, whether there's a beautiful and expensive Pebble Beach or whether they're someplace, a glorious place in Doral, Hawaii, in Florida, Miami are open to them, or golf courses in Phoenix or Hawaii. The Canadians are staying away. I'm told the touristic golfers are down 12% March to March last year and this year. So that, there we are. I don't know where all this is going, but there are other factors way outside the game itself which may impact the trends.
That is fascinating stuff. And as we finish up, I want to talk about what you're doing these days, because you work more than I do, which is ridiculous, but you work even more than I do, building courses and reordering courses, shaping courses, that sort of thing. What's on the docket for you as a golf course architect, as a golf course designer?
Well, as you know, my son is Robert Trent Jones III, is carrying on the great brand name and traditions of my father and myself, and we are lucky to be continuing to work in beautiful new courses, as well as refining and updating courses that have needed renovation, such as Wisley in outside London, courses that we design, we get a second chance. People say, do you mind changing your own course and updating it? And farmer mind milking the cow twice, as long as he gets paid for the, we're fine with that. So as long as golf architecture is extremely collaborative. The people that we work with, starting with the owner itself and the investors and the land and the owner of the land, we listen carefully to what their goals are and we adjust the design accordingly. It's not just about 18 holes with our nice technical things we've already talked about, but is it going to be aesthetic? Is it going to attract people to come back and take care of the course for years and years and people to travel distances if there are resorts to play the courses? So we listen carefully to their goals and then adjust, and then we have to build a course with contractors. Now we have everybody thinking that, you know, they're a golf architect. That's somebody once asked me, how many golf architects are there? I said, how many golfers are there? Everybody has an opinion about how the hole should play, but they forget that the architecture is 50% unseen. It has to do with drainage and irrigation and water pipes that you don't see in the underground, and soil mechanics and choice of agronomy and turf that you just take for granted. The players want a firm surface. They want well-maintained fairways, and particularly greens, usually at quicker speeds than they should be. And that's what they talk about mostly, is conditioning. Then if they're really into the game, they talk about the actual challenge to their shot-making abilities and their choices, which we call strategic golf. They expect that the course, the bunkers will not be that hard to get out of. Once upon a time, a bunker was a hazard. You might get a buried lie in the face at Wingfoot, for example. That's a particularly difficult shot. So you get punished for missing the green. And now it's water hazards, particularly at a place like Augusta, which started that trend. That's the American style. In the British style, the links style, it's revetted bunkering. So it's an obstacle course. And the idea is to avoid the punishment and enjoy the pleasure of pulling out. That's been the game 500 years, and it remains the game. So there's many, many ways to do that. And I think that everybody should play the game as it is. And if they'd like to play it on a simulator, why not? But that's not real golf. and you have to go outside and play in the open air.
I couldn't agree more with that. And I guess as we close, I want to ask you, because if there's anything that you're famous for, and there's a lot of things that you're famous for, if anything, it's your mastery of designing par threes. It seems to be in the family, a gene, if you will. So I won't ask you, outside of the ones that you've designed, give me three of your favorite par threes in the world.
Well, my father's great par three, revision 16th hole at Augusta National, which has been slightly revised again. They elongated the bunker on the left side. I myself think it, he would frame a hole with bunkering, but they were smaller bunkers then. And you know, but the pond was what makes the difference. Another famous hole, which is dramatic for its scenery, of course, is number 7 at Pebble Beach. But if you were to take the ocean away, it would be kind of a wee little hole.
Exactly.
Like this, stamp, and you wouldn't really pay much attention to it if it was in Kansas. But next to the Pacific Ocean, it makes a difference in its sight. So then in terms of great par threes, I think there's some of the more difficult par threes will be encountered at Royal Port Rush and again at Oakmont. These are hard golf courses. You think about Tommy Armour. He won the Open Championship after fighting hand-to-hand combat in World War I because he had extremely strong hands at Carnoustie, which I think is a great golf course. It's been let go in recent years and needs some loving care to bring it back to its proper conditioning. And then Oakmont, where he won the American Open. So these courses last the test of time for their tenacity and their difficulty, and only the best players can win in medal play on those courses, and they have to be physically strong and have great personal character, golf character as well.
Well, talk about personal character. There is no one in my humble mind that has more than you. This has been a fascinating walk, as it always is when we talk to you, and my only hope is that I have behaved well enough so that you will want to come on again in the future.
Michael, you always behave well, and not only that, that sonorous voice of yours gets me to think, oh my God, we got to sing here or something. So I don't know, but maybe the riff from Hotel California, if it had words. Want to check in, but can never check out of the game of golf.
Oh man, you're killing me. We got to hit up the people at Augusta with that one. That's an offer they cannot refuse. They cannot refuse that. A duet with you and me singing. I will get on the phone with those people. Bobby, you are a joy. Thank you so much for joining us. And we will hit you up before the season's over again, okay?
Okay, Michael, you're a joy too. And we look forward to seeing you in California or any other place in the East Coast. And let's have another fun time together and play some golf.
Roger that. That is the inimitable Robert Trent Jones Jr. I think he is right on the state of the game. He is right on the way that people are playing and who's playing the game. It's really, he's right on all of those topics. And I think it's going to be a great year for the game, but it's going to be a pivotal year for the game. And a lot of what happens in the future depends on what happens now, both on the course, off the course, all those things. And as my good friend Bobby says, we'll just wait and see, won't we? We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, and I'm excited because golf season is here. It's upon us. We've had our first major champion of the year. Again, congratulations to Rory. I think he did a spectacular job. I just happened to be one of the many, many, many people who has had the opportunity to admire him from a distance. I'm one of the few people who's had an opportunity to get to talk to him in person. And I can tell you that he is just as much of a gentleman as he appears to be. He's an exceptional person, and it's so good to see him winning a championship. And it's so good to have golf season going again, because it means that we can get into our thing and try to do the things that we just saw done over the last couple of Sundays on the PGA Tour. And of course, part of that now is getting the right equipment in our hands. We know we can't do it with just any old stick. So there's been one guy who has been, I think, a visionary and a leader as far as this whole trend towards customizing and getting a custom fit on your clubs. He has gone from zero to fabulously successful in what I think is a record amount of time. He continues to be an innovator in the process. I'm, of course, talking about my good friend, Nick Sherburn, who is the founder of Club Champion. Nick, welcome back to the 19th hole. How are you, my friend?
Thanks, Michael. I'm doing great. You know, the weather's changing here in Chicago, where our headquarters is. So, you know, golf for me, even though we got stores all around the country world, for that matter. But my golf season's about to start pretty soon, so that's fun.
So where are you going to be playing? Give me the outlook for the next 2-3 weeks. Where are you going?
Well, no, I'll just be here in Chicago. Actually, I do have one trip. I'm going to go down and play in a member guest outside of Pinehurst in a couple of weeks with some industry friends, so that should be fun. But, you know, here in Chicago, it's always good to get back to the clubs. I play at a place called Black Sheep, but, you know, I'm after 20-some years of this business, I'm kind of America's guest, too.
I hear you, brother, and rightfully so. You have deserved it. And I know the people who are loyal listeners to our show, God bless you, every single one of you, have heard this before, but it changes a little bit. It gets a little bit bigger, a little bit more expansive every single time. So I think when I knew you, when I first met you, you had 3 to 4 stores, something like that. One of them in the DC area. I think the DC store had just opened up, store number 4, I think it is, over there in Rockville. Give us the lay of the land. Where is Club Champion right now? Where can we find it? And I know that that's a big ask, but where can we find Club Champion right now?
No, it's so much fun. I mean, listen, this started as two guys in a garage learning, you know, this was a passion project that started as two guys in the garage chasing their own dream of playing better golf through tweaking their equipment, because they had been told either, you know, yeah, you know, you don't really need all that. It's not good enough. You don't need to spend the money, that kind of stuff. And I didn't accept that as an answer as a consumer myself. And so I went down my own rabbit hole, and here we are 27 years later. I have 138 stores in the domestically and 11 internationally. And the goal's never changed. It's, you know, let's take the brand out of it to an extent. Let's take Bryce out of it to an extent. You know, obviously we're going to pay attention to those things, but they're smaller things. Let's have performance be the focus. Let's make that work. And that's what we've always lived and died by: better fit, lower scores. It's not just our tagline. It's what we all believe at the top. It's why I still interview. I'm the last interview of every fitter we hire, because we want to deliver golfers lower scores. And that's, you know, cut through the marketing and actually get to what works for that particular player.
I think that's such, that just gives me chills, actually, to hear you talk about that in terms of the individual, because there are so many places that you can go now, because you started, I don't know if you started the trend, but you certainly made the trend popular for club fitting. And of course, people follow, and there's a number of places where you can go and get fit and get that sort of thing. But what passes for personal attention is really guiding you towards a particular product that they may have in stock. And you guys don't do that. And you'll take each player as an individual, whether he is, in fact, a club champion or just wants to go out and have some fun, just wants to enjoy the game a little better, a little quicker. And no matter what that range is, you give that guy an opportunity to do the best and be the best that he can possibly be. And I don't know if that's your mission, but that's what you're doing right now.
Well, that's exactly the name of the game. I don't care if you're a 36 handicap or you play on the PGA Tour.
Right.
You know, having the right equipment to play your best golf and enjoy the game is where it's at. And, you know, I always tell people, I go, listen, we are different. We're different than what you're used to, like going to a demo day or going to a big box facility and getting what you get. You know, we take a different approach. Yeah, it's more all in. Yeah, you know, it can be more expensive. It can be those things. But the reality is, it's all fact based. It's data based. It's what it is. It is what it is, as I always like to say. Numbers don't lie, and so that's what, you know, we're going to deliver. And to your point at the beginning, you know, when I first started set out on this journey and we started building this business, it was like telling people why they should get fit, right? Because they weren't even getting fit at that point. And so now, to your point, there's a lot of places to get fit, and fitting is more known. I think I saw the stat was like 80-some% now say they're going to get fit with their next club. Well, now it's like, how do you decide a fitter? But also, there's one other component people don't think about when they go get fit. They get excited about the fit. They get excited about the distance and gains and just the what they're going to see out on the golf course. But the problem is then they don't get golf clubs that perform like they did in the fit for whatever reason. They went and bought them and specs got off or whatever it is. That's what we do here is not only do we control the fit, but we control the build. And that way we can control the outcome of you actually getting that performance on the course and standing behind it.
You know, you may have just opened up a whole nother line of research for me and everybody who kind of does what I do, because we've all assumed that the game has grown and grown in popularity because of, you know, a deadly pandemic that got everybody outside and looking at other ways to get exercise and get fresh air and be with their friends and that sort of thing. And golf kind of stood in the way of that and got to be popular, and we're seeing record numbers on the golf courses. But when you really look at it, to keep people in the game, they have to play better, because we've seen it before. They get in, they don't like it, they can't hit good shots, and so they go back to bowling. But 80% is a number I did not expect to hear. 80% of people are getting fit. So you are maybe more of a contributing factor than one would expect to the growth of the entire game.
Well, that would be an interesting study for somebody to do, but it, all I know is I watch the stats that, you know, whether it's the National Golf Foundation or Data Tech or one of these places give, and it's amazing, you know, after all these years of being in the business, I've seen that number be below 10%, and now all of a sudden I read one this winter with 80%, and I'm like, holy smokes. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of things, and I think golfers are getting wiser. You know, I think there's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of products out there, and you got to cut through that. That's difficult. That's what I always hoped us to be, is a trusted advisor too, right? Like somebody who really invests in you and gets to understand you, your game, your goals, desires. Now, we may rephrase those because we know a little bit more, and you only know what you know about golf equipment. But our whole goal is, like I tell every fitter, is when that customer leaves, to leave them more educated than when they came in on what all the numbers mean, how they come about, what causes them to happen. Because I want them just not to pay the, you know, everybody goes, well, Nick just wants them to pay the bill. No, I want to sell golf clubs. Don't get me wrong. There's no hiding that. But I want it to be golf clubs that are going to help you play better golf, so that when you get done with the round and you just played your best golf ever, you're in the 19th hole praising your fitter's name, and hopefully their buddies are coming over and go, oh, whatever you did for Michael, you got to do for me, because now he's kicking my butt.
Yeah. we'll just put a check mark by that and continue on. We're talking with the great Nick Sherburn, the founder of Club Champion, here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. Let's talk about the pros, because we just saw what Rory did. We saw what Justin Thomas did down at Hilton Head. And people are watching the game, not as much as they used to, according to the numbers anyway. But the pro results, the way the pros play the game, are still let's say it guides how people expect to see their ball hit. They expect to see the same sorts of things. This brings me to my next question. How influential is the pro game on your business? Do people really expect to see what they see on TV on the weekend in their own shots when they go out and play on the golf course, and they expect you to get them there?
Yeah, I think that's gotten – I think the realism there has gotten a little – or the self-awareness has gotten a little better on that. You know, it used to be the old saying, what wins on Sunday sells on Monday. Now, right. That being said, we never really were a place you buy anything off the shelf, so people would come in and go, hey, I saw, you know, XYZ, we'll use Rory. I saw Rory using this. Should I use this? Well, let's get into a fit and find out, right? That's going to be our answer. But right. You see less and less of that, although it's still important. I mean, you know – that's part of awareness for these brands, right? And so, you know, being able to watch Justin Thomas, who ain't a big guy, not that Rory is either, and they're bombing at 325, you know, we get that question a lot. Like, okay, well, how are these guys that are smaller than me hitting it, you know, 70 yards past me? And I said, well, there's a couple things there. I mean, but
where do we start?
But yeah, there's a couple things there. And yes, can you buy some distance? Oh, absolutely. In most cases, if you get properly fit, you can buy some distance. But yeah, to your point, you're not going to buy Justin Thomas distance unless you do a bunch of yoga and speed training and get your clubhead speed up to his.
Yeah, right. And I always say, you know, there's distance, but there's, you know, right post is wrong address, right? You can hit the ball further, but are you hitting it in the right direction? And don't be shy or humbled. You guys are not only helping people hit the ball further, you're hitting them, getting them to hit the ball towards where they intended it to go as well. And
right.
Go ahead, please.
Well, people take that for granted, and this is why I always love to say it. They come in and they go, Nick, I don't, you know, I've heard this a million times in my own fitting bay, is, you know, Nick, I don't feel like I got my A game today. I don't feel like I'm hitting it well. Okay, do you, last time you played golf, could you say that you felt that way, same way? They go, well, yeah, kind of. I go, well, that's what club fitting's about. One of the things is, a good shot is a good shot. And probably, yes, different clubs will matter on a good shot, but it's minimal. It's the bad shots that we want to eliminate. It's that shot that falls short and goes in the bunker and plugs. It's that shot that keeps fading right or left and goes in the water or OB. Those are the ones that we can save strokes on by eliminating. And so I always tell golfers, I go, listen, it's not about your A stuff. Trust me, when I see the PGA Tour, I hung out 2 days on the Vans at the Masters. Not that a lot of people are doing a lot of stuff at a major, but I was hanging out there and, you know, talking and listening. And every time I go out there, they don't come in going, hey, I need this or I need that. They come in going, hey, I got this miss. How do we make it go away? Yeah. I mean, that's what they say. And so, you know, this week I need to draw the ball more. Okay, so we're going to build a golf club that draws more. So My point is to all golfers, it's like no matter your ability, come in, get fit. We find those leaks in there where you're hemorrhaging strokes for no reason and try to plug it.
I love that. You know, for some group, it's raise the roof. And for some others, it's raise the floor. You know, it all depends on where you are as to where you're going. And what you're saying is the club champion can help you no matter what your position, your current position is. We can get you to the next position using your services. And I'm seeing the prices. It's kind of, is it me? Or your price is kind of lower than ever? Or they're just stuck right where you were? I don't, I mean, it's crazy that the prices are so low.
Club prices are club prices are club prices. And the OEMs, you know, and the manufacturers, they set those. But our fitting fees, we have a lot more specials these days. You know, as club fitting became more and more popular, I still think, you know, people go, why do I have to pay for a club fitting? Well, why do you have to pay for a lesson? I go, it's one thing if you are going to a place that doesn't have a well-trained fitter, but our fitters are, you know, they come here for a month at my headquarters here in Chicago and spend a month with me. And these are people that have fit golf clubs for a long time and then spend a month getting trained. Then you have the best tools, the best resources, the best training. And so, you know, we've always protected our fitting fees, and I still think the industry should protect them more. But we have lowered them because, hey, it's a business and there's a competition out there. So To me, you're right. We got great specials on there. You can go to our website, clubchampion.com, and you can see our great fitting specials we have going on. And listen, you're going to get a top-notch tour experience that's going to help you play a better golf at a great price.
Right. And that's the thing. The top-notch tour experience can help you no matter where you are. You don't have to be a top-notch pro to be helped by a top-notch experience.
I'll be honest with you. I prefer – some days I like working with 25 handicaps more than anything. Because the way I look at it is they have the most to gain, and I want to help them a big time. And so they can leave with, you know, a bunch of strokes off their score, where if I'm working with a single digit, you know, we're tweaking small stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really just hunt and pack with those guys and trying a million things, but it's getting something that feels comfortable and allows you to do the things that you're capable of doing in the first place. That really is the magic of Club Champion. What's next for you now? I mean, you've got everything from AI, you've got simulators, you've got recreational golf, all these sort of things. How are you looking to take Club Champion into the future and make it continue to be relevant to the next generation of golfers?
Well, you hit it right there with the AI talk. And so a couple of years ago, I built out an AI program that, you know, when I started fitting, there was only probably about, you know, let's call it 10 to 15 shafts on the wall and 10 heads on the wall. You know, now there's, you know, we claim 65,000 plus combinations. It's actually higher than that. We just haven't changed it. And so, like, how do you expect every fitter to know all that, right? Like, it's insane how many it's great that the manufacturers make all this stuff and very specific to help you play better golf. But how do you go through all that? And listen, you can't hit everything. And so, you know, the beauty of having our size is we're collecting a million swings a month in our stores. And so we have a plethora of data from 330 different fitters, all these customers that swing different ways. And so why not throw that together into an algorithm now that can allow us to help us be more efficient and also not miss out on opportunities that maybe our brain wasn't quick enough to have with all these combinations.
Yeah.
And so we built out a thing called the Fitter AI Copilot, and I'm going to continue to grow that. That helps it's not to replace the fitter, it's to help the fitter along, make them smarter, and by the way, validate what the fitter's doing.
I love that. Is that available now?
It's available now at every Club Champion, and every Club Champion fitter uses it during their fits.
That's fantastic news. It's something I'm going to have to take advantage of because it's been a while since my last set of clubs was fit, and it's time to get on that process, get on that road towards getting a new set. So once again, the only thing better than a first-time customer is a repeat customer, in my opinion. So you've got one in me.
Well, we'd love to put you through it, Michael.
from your lips to God's ears, man. So I'll be in touch with you about getting something like that done. You said it before, but say it again, the website where people can get more information about Club Champion.
Clubchampion.com is our website, and you know, there's some great videos to watch about our process and how we go about things, so you can get comfortable with it, and then you can book your fitting. You can see all the fitting prices and book your fitting at a store near you. Like I said, in the States here, we have 138 locations, so I'm sure there's one near where you live.
Beautiful. Nick, man, it is always so good to talk to you. You always get a new idea, a fresh way of looking at things, and of course, you get some great sticks in our hands thanks to you. Really appreciate you being here, and we'll get you back in as soon as we can when you have something new to talk about, brother.
Thanks, Michael.
You got it. That's Nick Sherburn, the founder of Club Champion. Listen, the number that stood out for me right there is 80%. That's going to be in my description of this entire episode, that 80% of people who are coming to the game are getting fit for clubs, and people can't understand what a tremendous change that is, because I remember when that was 8% and now it's 80. That is such good news for people, because it's saying that people who come to the game want to be fit properly. When you wear a suit, you want it to fit properly. You don't want to be holding onto the waistband while you're in line to get into whatever event that you're going into. You want the thing to fit. So to have clubs that fit properly are going to affect tremendously your enjoyment of the overall experience of the game. And believe me, there is no better place that you can get to than Club Champion to get that thing. So get there and do that thing. We're going to take a break. We come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. So that's it, and that's all for this episode of the 19th Hole. I would like to thank my special guest, Robert Trent Jones Jr., the one and only Robert Trent Jones Jr. He is such a magnificent guest with us every time he comes on. Can't wait till he comes back on again to give us more of what he does so very well. Also, thank you very much to Nick Sherburn, that spectacular success that he has created at Club Champion. We can't wait to see what he's got for us in the store. Go to it. If you haven't gone to a Club Champion, you need to go to get your next set of clubs. Go see and experience what they have for yourself, because it is going to change your game. And I can't wait to see what they're doing for us now and what they're going to do in the future. Of course, you can get this podcast and all other podcasts called The 19th Hole with Michael Williams on Apple, on Spotify, or any other service that plays your favorite podcasts. We want to thank you, of course, for being a guest. We value each and every one of you. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another show. Until then, whether it's raining, sunny, snowing, I don't care. You can hit a golf ball. So go out, hit one, and when you do, do your best to try to hit it straight. Michael Williams, 19th hole.